Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy T.T. Thomas back at the helm, holding you down for the Cornerstone Show here in Sports City. Welcome to the Sunday morning brunch. You got 90. I'm going to get into that in a little bit. You already know I'm fully focused, but I'm ahead of myself right now. So just deal with me, Sports City. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Thomas is alive. Welcome to the brunch.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. T.T. Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm T.T. Thomas holding down the East Coast.
T.T., I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chance for Sunday the brunch with Mark and T.T.
Good morning.
Kick back, relax, enjoy everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and T.T. Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
The call-in number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes or so locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And we got it all, Sports City. Playoffs, MMA bouts, MLB, NFL news, whatever you want, we got it. This is why we call it the brunch. We got all types of dishes here locked and loaded for you. So come on and eat with us, man. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. SportsCityChefs.com. That is continually going to be the website. Fully focused. So let's get into it. Calling in by way of the state of California. I got breaking news. Brian Hughes here in the building. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
TP, I'm feeling pretty good. It's good to be here in the kitchen. It's good to talk to you. It's good to have this weekend to talk sports. And we've had a lot of sports action this weekend and this last week, so I'm definitely eager to talk some sports, man. I'm fired up.
Okay, man. Make sure you get your water or your coffee. I gotta get you at full Hughes extent. Now I need the Hughes family for real. I met all parties of the Hughes family, so I know what you're capable of. No, I'm just joking, man. But let's have at it, man. Very interesting show to get into. People that know me, I know a lot of them are probably gonna come to this show and call me out. So it's okay. I've dealt with it all. Brian, why not get into the situation of what went down in the UFC situation? First and foremost, I'll go from one event to the main event, one with Chris Weidman going up against Vitor Belfort, winning in interesting fashion, knowing how the first round went down, and Weidman actually got caught by a couple of shots by Belfort. Belfort actually had him on the rope or up against the cage, you will, and almost dropped him. And Weidman actually ended up gaining ground, getting him to the ground and winning that fight and remaining undefeated. And at the end of the fight, he storms out and says, "Stop doubting me. The train is about to leave." Basically jump on the bandwagon now, because he's beaten Vitor Belfort. He's also beaten Anderson Silva, too. And him being the American, I think we should start getting behind him and supporting him and thinking that the next fight that he takes, he's going to end up losing. The next fight he's going to take, he's going to end up losing. He ends up winning big fight after big fight and remaining undefeated and respectively is the champ until somebody knocks him off. I think he's worked for that. Your thoughts on that one, if you did see it or hear about the situation with Chris Weidman defending his championship up against Vitor Belfort, who is a notable guy that basically stuns people in MMA. So this is the first one. I know a lot of people are coming for me for the next one, but at least this fight actually stood up to all of the hype before the main event.
Yeah, you know what, I did watch this. I actually went over to a friend's house last night. We sat down. I watched the entire UFC, the prelim card, all the way to the main event, the co-main events. And, you know, I said this last night, and I'll say it again before the fight even happened. To me, every fight that Chris Weidman goes in, he's the underdog. And so I understood his thought process. You know, you mentioned the fight against against Silva. People forget the, you know, the battle he had against Lyoto Machida, and he beat him as well. So, I mean, the kid has proven to be resilient, and last night was no different. I mean, you know, people, you know, just to put this in perspective, Ty, you look at the last three fights that Vito Belfort has had, and for those of you new to the sport of MMA, Vito Belfort is quite possibly one of the two, three, four, five biggest names in that 180-pound weight division. He's a monster. I mean, he in his last three fights, he's knocked out Dan Henderson, who's one of only two guys to hold belts at the same time at two different weight classes. He knocked out Michael Bisping, who's arguably a top 10 fighter, who is a top 10 fighter now. You know, Dan Henderson, a top 10 fighter of all time, potentially. And Lyoto Machida, and did it in convincing fashion, you know, to the point where he was concussed. So the guy is no joke. So when he came out and he jumped on Chris Weidman for probably 20, 30 seconds, and was punching away, you know, everybody got nervous. But, you know, I will say I was watching it, and I said, you know, he's blocking a lot of these shots. He's very calm, cool, calculated. He just bought his time. He waited. I really, really like Chris Weidman, and I've been saying for a while, you know, as a fan, not just, you know, not just an American, but as a fan of the sport, it's good to see that, you know, we have a true, you know, American champion. You know, because most of these classes, you know, all the way down from your Mighty Mouses to your Jose Aldos to, you know, on through, most of these guys are not American. So it's nice to see Weidman doing well. And you know what? I do agree with you, Ty. You know, I've been saying, you know, hey, don't underestimate this guy, but probably three-quarters of the house that I was at last night thought Vito Belfort would win. I was definitely in the minority, and he's done well. I think if nothing else, he's definitely gained some support. You know, a lot of people don't like the way that he wins. You know, they said, oh, he got lucky against Anderson Silva. But they don't realize that, you know, checking a leg kick is actually a technique. It actually requires some skill to check that leg kick. Before he got caught with the hand when Anderson Silva was kind of messing around, he was getting his ass kicked before then. He got taken to the ground a couple times and was ground and pounded. So I think Chris Weidman is really skilled. I think the thing with Weidman is because he's only had 13 fights, because he's undefeated and he just happens to beat whoever's in front of him that night, I don't think people have been exposed to this kid a lot. So I do think certain people doubt him, but I think last night, if you're a true MMA fan, I think last night put to rest whether or not this kid is legitimate or for real, because no joke, Vito Belfort right now is quite possibly the best Vito Belfort that he's ever been. You know, he's much more skilled, he's much more dangerous now than he was even in his 20s.
And here's the interesting thing about it. Let's look at the resume right now. Now, Chris has just started fighting in 2009, so he got a six-year window right here, undefeated. But the last couple of fighters that he's fought, you can't take anything away from him. He took care of business up against Belfort. He took care of business up against Lyoto. Anderson Silva twice, back-to-back. Let's do both fights. Silva, you know, put his hands down and let, Chris throw punches and ended up knocking him out. That's the risk you take by playing around. And then the second fight, he actually tried to come out and take care of business. And in the second round, he ends up breaking his leg. And everybody remembers that horrific situation. Like, I still get the chills and get disgusted thinking about that. So it's very interesting to see how Chris took care of business and knowing how Belfort actually had him dazed. And the punch of barrage that he threw at him, but this is what Chris actually went out there and said. He knew that he was going to get tired and end up punching himself out because he was going for the kill. All Chris had to do was withstand that, which he did. And the interesting thing about Chris that I give him a ton of credit, when he knew that Vitor got tired, he basically shot at his legs, and once he got his legs, he got him to the ground. Both of them are black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he really could have let Vitor have it down there. He was basically waiting for the ref to stop it because he was, you know, just throwing punch after punch at his head and chin area and waiting for the ref to do it. And by the time, you know, Vitor turned to his side to basically try and get out of it, he couldn't withstand the punches nor turn anymore. And the rest is history. I mean, you got to give Chris Weidman his credit right now. I didn't want to take anything away from him. We had the show yesterday in discussing about this bout, and I was, you know, trying to convince Nacho, you know, just give him some credit, man. I was like, wait, don't just totally take too much away from him.
Yeah.
And it went down the way it went down. And you know, Belfort, and it was interesting what Chris said after the fight. He was like, there's no need for Belfort to sit over there hanging his head. He's a great fighter. But, he, you know, then he said, you know, the train is leaving. Hopefully you guys jump on board. You know, because he basically told people to stop doubting him. I hope. Or wonder if he was listening to what was going down during the food fight. That's just interesting in itself, how that went down. But right now, he got a ton of respect for me. He went out there and beat some of the top names in his weight class. I definitely tip my hat to what Chris went out there to perform in an undercard bout, which this is a main event fight in itself.
Yeah, and, you know, and Ty, the other thing is on his way up to the top, I mean, remember, early in his career, he fought Uriah Hall, who's a guy who's very dangerous, that he beat soundly with a knockout, beat Mark Munoz with a knockout due to elbow strikes. Damian Maya, who's fighting for the title, he beat him. So, I mean, this dude has fought a lot of the best guys. I think for people, you know, when you think of, you know, world title holders, I think people think of, you know, GSP, you know, Matt Hughes, somebody, you know, BJ Penn. They think of these guys that have fought in 20, 30 fights in the ring, and, you know, that's just obviously not his path. I mean, he's 30. Some people would say, you know, hey, maybe he got into the game a little late, but I mean, basically, he's destroyed every single person that's been put in front of him. He's amazing on the ground. You mentioned the BJJ background, but to me, the most impressive thing is the two-time All-American wrestler, because I don't think people realize how critical, how key that element is when you get somebody down, basically being able to hold them there. And he's very good at that. So if he gets you to the ground, the fight's over.
Okay, we do have a chef in queue calling in from the South Carolina area. Chandler Nostradamus Knight, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm tired. It's too early in the morning.
Gotta get him up. Gotta wake him up. Gotta wake him up. So, Chandler, did you catch at least some of these fights, or did you hear about them? Your thoughts on the first one with Chris Weidman going up against Vitor Belfort and knocking him out early, especially after he went through his struggles in the fight, early in the fight?
Well, we talked about that yesterday, and I told you that the reason I didn't believe in Belfort was because he's not on the steroids anymore. And that was one of the things that was going on Twitter after the fight went down, and, you know, a lot of people took shots at him because of the steroid thing. And that's, you know what, it is what it is. You were on steroids, you won a lot of fights, now you're off steroids, and he went up against somebody and lost. I thought Weidman would win. That was why I thought Weidman would win. I didn't think Belfort would be the same guy without the steroids against the top-notch fighter, and he wasn't. Weidman did a good job. You know, I'm not a fan of Chris Weidman because he comes off as a spoiled prick, but he's a great fighter, and he'll be a good champion. But I always find it interesting. Everybody wants to scream, oh, we got an American as a champion. So what? What does that got to do with the price of tea in China? It was two guys fighting, and the best guy won. Who cares where he's from?
Hey, don't take away from somebody that's just like you. He's a New Yorker now. So he's from your hometown. So give him some credit. Screaming, he was screaming out Long Island and everything. So
He's from Long Island. He's from New York. He's from Long Island. There's a difference.
Right. And I know how Long Island is. Believe me, I went to college with a lot of them. So I know how people from Long Island act. They feel like they are a different country. Like, literally. No games. No games being involved. But he's a New Yorker. And knowing he's close to home here, you know, he's basically a ferry ride across the Long Island Sound, whatever. But it just like he said, nobody doubt him no more. He's here and he's unbeaten. And I don't know what name will pop up in his weight class or if anybody actually wants to move up or, you know, try and take this guy on. But he's taking MMA by storm and becoming a fan favorite. So just like he said, this train is leaving. So people have to show him his respect right now. We do also have another chef in queue, co-host from the food fight on Saturday. We have Mr. Silva Nacho. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, it's beautiful here on the West Coast. It's probably the last week of 80 degrees for me in Arizona, so I'm just living it up and soaking all this good weather.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the heat. Don't please don't start talking about summer. Your thoughts on the first fight and how it basically went opposite direction of what you threw out there. And interesting that Chris threw the statement out there to basically say, no more doubting him. You know, I can only think about one person and one person only. Your thoughts on that fight?
Doubting him is not going to be an option for me anymore. Liking the guy and being on his side is definitely not going to be me either. I don't like the guy. I still hope he loses every fight from here on out, but I still got to respect the man for being undefeated, doing what I thought he couldn't do. And Chandler hit the nail on the head. Vitor Belfort, Chandler and Brian both hit a nail on the head. Vitor Belfort is at the best skill-wise he's ever been in his life. He just doesn't have the steroids to keep him up anymore. If he had those roids, obviously, that were legal at the time, that barrage at the beginning might not have ended, might have ended the fight instead of letting Whiteman get up. So I do agree with Brian in the fact that I think Belfort right now, skill-wise, is probably the best he's ever been in his career. But physically, to Chandler's point, I think the roids really did help him. I didn't think they were a big help. Obviously, I mentioned that yesterday. I thought that the fact that, like I mentioned yesterday, his skill set is up there. Talking about Belfort, I thought he would be able to handle Whiteman, maybe go through some barrages. Also, I can't remember who hit on it, but the exhaustion factor that Belfort went through after 30 seconds of throwing a flurry, I did not expect that to happen either. So when Whiteman got on top and started pummeling him and won the fight is the fashion he did, there was nothing but respect for the guy. He won the fight. But I'm with Chandler on this one. The fact that he's an American doesn't make me want to root for him, and definitely the fact that he's from the East Coast makes me not want to root for him. But it's just one of those things where I don't like the guy. I don't like what he says. I don't like how he acts. And that's just a personal opinion. And like everyone's going to tell you, we're all entitled to our own opinion. But I'm not going to denigrate the guy's accomplishment. He's a UFC middleweight champion. He's beaten everyone in his path. He's knocked out people. He knocked out an ill-prepared Anderson Silva. He broke his leg with a leg check. I mean, just the things like that you can do, you know, especially beating up Machida and things like that. He's on the path right now. Like Brian said, the one thing that does get me is that number 13. I wish he was 26. I wish it was almost 30, but that's just something I can't deal with. I can't force him to fight people and things like that early in his career. So I got to not necessarily bow down, but respect the man and what he's done, what he's been able to do in this sport. But I'm not going to like him. I'm not going to root for him. I'm definitely hoping he's losing his next fight. But it is what it is. The guy is just, you know, he's proving me wrong every time, and he'll prove me wrong until he loses, and that's just how it is going to be. But like I said, I got to respect the man for going in there and doing his job and doing the business that he was put out there to do. And anyone that's put in front of him, he's beat him. So, the names that get thrown out there, I don't know. I don't have any names off the top of my head. I still think an Anderson Silva, if he can get his shit together, sorry, if he can get his stuff together here, with the things that he had to deal with after his last fight, I just think that would be a fight I would still like to see, even though a lot of people still don't want to see it. I would like to see Anderson Silva take the fight seriously and do this out. Maybe not right away. Maybe let him get a couple more fights in. and see what happens, because in my book, Anderson Silva is still the greatest MMA fighter ever. So I just still need to see him, what he does. And we all hear about Anderson moving up to the next weight class. Since John Jones isn't there anymore, that might happen. But as it pertains to the middleweight class, it's just going to be interesting to see who steps up and tries to defeat this guy, being Chris Weidman, because, you know, everyone in front of him has been knocked down.
So Brian, anything that you'd like to interject with that you heard thus far? And also, I mean, hearing how everybody is making a statement that they still don't believe in his situation. I mean, yes, he's 30 years old. He's only had 13 fights, but he's taken care of these guys, and literally everybody that he's fought, professional fighters, hands are registered weapons, and he's taking care of business, going in front of these guys toe-to-toe, no matter what it takes to win these fights. It's still questionable in a lot of these people's minds that he still has something to prove. I mean, what is it going to take? I'm not going to lie. I'm a fan now. Like I was thinking that, you know, Anderson Silva's situation, he had his hands down, and I'm like, yeah, he got a shot in to knock him out. Then the next fight, he ends up breaking his leg. It's like, what is he supposed to do? He's in there trying to fight him, and Anderson Silva played around in one fight, and the other fight, he ends up breaking a bone, and he has to move on. It has to be a short-lived process. And do we get caught? And this is in all fighting situations. I'm calling everybody out, not particularly everybody here in the kitchen, but people in general, people that watch sports, are people hung up in eras because of the way that we were brought up or the way that we grew up watching a lot of these fighters. Like, respectively, in boxing, you got situations where depending on where your age started or whatever, but you've seen the likes of Hagler, Hearns, and Duran and Sugar Ray and Muhammad Ali, Frazier, Foreman, and then it's the boxers of today that are doing their thing. There's a lot more undefeated boxers now comparable to what they seen back then because they were warriors taking on fights. But you can't blame the situation on the fighters of today and what they've been going through and trying to set their resume up. So are we, like, caught up in auras, caught up in the moment in situations? And this actually goes toward what Chris had to go through and trying to still make people believe. Is that a situation too, Brian? Yes or no?
You know, I don't know, Ty. I mean, not to get off subject here, but I feel like it's important for me to point out, to clarify, if you will, my statement. If the Pride organization in Japan was still active, if it was still going on, and, you know, Americans held a belt at every single weight class in the organization, and somebody came along and knocked them off, I think that, you know, I think that there would be some kind of, you know, it would be a big deal, if you were. You know, I will say this. I think that Weidman, just specifically talking about Weidman, I think Weidman, the reason why, you know, like I said earlier, I think the reason why Weidman hasn't gotten, let's say, the credit he deserves is primarily due to his lack of experience. You know, he's fought in 13 fights, and of those 13 fights, you know, basically the only fights that people remember are his last four. The two against Silva, the one against Machida, and the one last night versus Belfort. You know, they don't remember the Mark Munoz fight where he knocked him out. They don't remember the Daniel Maia fight. They don't remember the fights on the way up. But, you know, like I said, you know, personalities, the way that they clash, Ty, makes for either a great superhero or a great villain. There's certain guys you're going to love and certain guys that you don't love. Like, I am not a big Daniel Cerrone fan. I love the way he fights. I love watching his fights, but I am just not a big fan. The next guy you talk to might be the biggest Daniel Cerrone fan. So, you know, stylistically, the way these guys are, the way their attitude is, you can't please everybody, and the sooner that, as a fighter especially, the sooner a fighter realizes, you know what, all I can do is be me, and people are either going to like me or not based off of what I do, you know, you'll move forward from there. But I will tell you, I haven't watched one Chris Weidman fight that I thought like, man, this dude is just stalling, or you know, this is a super boring fight. There is always action in his fights, and that's one thing that I appreciate, because it seems like from the middleweight on up, every once in a while you'll get one of these dud fights where the guys just kind of lay on each other, and that's, you know, and I understand that it's technical and it's, you know, tacticians and this and that, but you'll get a fight like that, and as a fan, to see these guys, you know, just kind of hug up against the fence or lay on top of each other on the ground, you know, you're kind of like, all right, man, come on, you know, push the pace. Don't just try and grind out a win. And he doesn't ever seem to just try and grind out a win, if you will. He always, one thing about Weidman is he is a finisher. He always goes for the finish.
And the thing that you mentioned about Cowboy, I'm actually a Cowboy fan, so Daniel Cerrone, I'm respecting what you go out there and do. And he was injured going into the fight, and this is different than what Manny Pacquiao threw out there, saying that he had a torn rotator cuff and the reason why he lost. So at least Cerrone actually won the fight, and they, you know, his trainers and so forth in his corner said that he was injured going into the fight. So I don't know if that would have been a hidden excuse if he would have lost. So, but, you know, generally just speaking, I want to see how people do feel around the kitchen. I'll come to you, Chandler, and see how you feel about it. Do we get caught up in errors? You know, us being historians of whatever respect the sport it may be, like, or just looking at every sport, you know, people will think about Ronnie Lott at the safety position, where today they'll think of, you know, Polamalu or Ed Reed being the best safeties in the game, or, you know, stuff like that, or, you know, the boxers or the fighters of yesteryear compared to what we have today. Do we get caught up in what we've seen previously and stay pat to what it is, or looking to a basketball situation where people like Dr. J over Michael Jordan, and then Michael Jordan's situation, or Kobe Bryant's situation to LeBron? Is it fair to the athlete?
Yes and no. There has to be a measuring stick. That is how we as fans measure greatness, and that is how the competitors themselves measure greatness. You have to have something to compete against, even if it's a mythical figure. If there's nobody good enough in what you do, then you have to create something to keep your competitive juices going. The history of the sport is what everybody is competing against. At the end of the day, truly, that's truly what they're all competing against. Most of the time, it's really not the person across from them. It's the history of the sport and their place in it. There now, those who get stuck in that and say there's never going to be anybody as good as such and such, that's where the fallacy lies. And you can't say no one's ever going to be as good as such and such. You can say you prefer a certain era, but you still have to be able to acknowledge the greatness of the era you're in. And as you said, it's a little different now. Guys aren't fighting all the time anymore. They're picking and choosing. Whether that's right, wrong, indifferent, that's a personal preference to each fan. Some fans, you know, like me, like Nacho, we might prefer the guys fight more. Maybe we want them to fight anybody and everybody. They're not doing that these days. They're not. They're being judicious in who they fight. They're picking their fights. They're picking certain styles and all those things to what? To enhance their career, to make more money, all those things. Just like we do with jobs. You don't just go take any job. You try to find a job that fits your skill set, you know, that's easily commutable and all of those things is going to pay you the most money. So that's what they do now. But, yeah, the history of the sport you're in plays a factor, not only in you know, how you challenge yourself, but how the fans view you. Absolutely it does. And without that, really, there wouldn't be a whole lot of interest, because what is the beauty of sports? The sports argument. The greatest thing about sports is sports argument. You can get five generations in a room who have nothing in common. If they're all into sports, now you got a conversation.
Okay, last on this one, Nacho, and then I'll get to the next fight. Your thoughts on us being, you know, caught up in the moment, if you will, on any sport. It doesn't even have to respectfully be MMA or boxing, football or basketball, baseball, whatever, you know. Are we just, you know, people that get caught up in what we grew up on and liking what we've seen when we grew up and then compare them to what we see in today's game, whatever sport it may be? Is it fair to these guys trying to make a name for themselves at the end of the day? They can't set it up and be like, well, you know what, let me get the DeLorean, you know, go back in time and pull Hagler and Sugar Ray in here and let's fight them against Floyd Mayweather. I know a lot of people would love to see that, but they got to, you know, respect what he's doing in front of the people that are respectfully in their weight class or in their arena or on the, in the ballpark or on the field of playing football. All of that, you know, is relevant at the end of the day.
You know, yeah, you hit it right on the head. Everyone would love to, you know, hop in that DeLorean and gun it to 88 and go pick up the greats and have them play, whether it be, you know, Jordan against Kobe in prime, LeBron and Jordan, you know, anyone you want in that era, Gretzky against anyone now. It would be amazing to do that. But I think the thing is, for me personally and the way I do it is, it's hard for me to call someone a great when their career hasn't ended yet. We're all going to have those measuring sticks, like Chandler said, but if your career hasn't ended yet, we don't know how the tail end of your career went. We don't know if you spiraled down or if you went even greater than we had anticipated. So, you know, now for me, with the exception of, you know, what I just said about Anderson Silva and MMA, it's hard for me to say someone is the greatest of all time or in that discussion when their career hasn't ended yet. I'm sure their resume can speak for itself up until now, but the career hasn't ended yet. They may have retired a few times here and there, but the career hasn't ended officially yet. Once they're in that Hall of Fame and it's ended and they're no longer coming back and it's evident that it's done and over with, then I make a full assessment on the player whether or not they could be in that discussion for the greatest of all time. That's just the way I think, and I think a lot of people nowadays don't respect that. They're so quick to see big numbers, see multiple knockouts, see, you know, the touchdown skyrocket every year, and are quick to throw people into discussions as elite quarterbacks or greatest of all time quarterbacks or greatest of all time basketball players and things like that, just because their numbers today are skyrocketing, when we know that the game today in almost every sport across the board is an easier game, whether you think about the offense being able to put up huge numbers and things like that in football, whether boxers being able to pick and choose their opponent so they can fight someone that they know they're going to beat up or they know why they have a better chance to beat up. So their numbers skyrocket. So they look like one of the greatest of all time with a 48-0 record. You know, things like that, you don't know what goes down until their career is already done and over with and they've done what they have. So to me, I just kind of wait. And like Chandler said, it's always a great thing. It's always a great discussion. It's always a great topic. You can get everyone involved in it, and it's always fun to get into those discussions. But I think when you're talking about the greatest of all time, to me, we can't start talking about that until we're talking about people whose careers are done. And we can talk about what we think, but until their career is done and over with and in the books, to me, it's hard to put someone in the greatest of all time category just yet. It's fun, like I said, to talk about it and see where they might end up when it's all said and done. Jumping them in there after 13 fights or jumping them in there after, you know, after the league has let, you know, so much offensive flourishment go by and you win every year in the regular season but show up shorter than mini-me in the postseason, you know, it doesn't – and that could be baseball or football. We know the name switch I've done on that. So it doesn't matter what you're doing sometimes because in the grand scheme of things, if you don't win – that ring or that thing at the end of the tunnel, sometimes your numbers at the end of the day just don't add up to it. So to me, like I said, I've got to wait till everyone's all said and done.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, the next fight is the one that sticks in my craw because I actually have a bond with one of these guys, and Daniel Cormier submitting Anthony Johnson and taking him to the ground several times and getting Anthony to end up tapping out. Your guys' thoughts on Cormier actually getting the light heavyweight championship in a very interesting fight, to say the least. I'm going to save you for last, Nacho, because you were the one that actually went with Cormier. Brian, I'll let you start this one back up again. Your thoughts on the main event, Cormier taking care of business up against Anthony Rumble Johnson.
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of painful. You know, Anthony Johnson's career in MMA could be defined as, you know, as peaks and valleys. I mean, this dude has fought some of the best guys at the middleweight division and knocked them out in the first round and fought another guy that he should beat, and he loses. and I've said for a long time, you know, a long time, that Anthony Johnson should do one of two things. Either A, he should bump up to 180, or he should bump up to the next weight division, excuse me, or he needs to lose a little bit of muscle mass. I mean, the guy is ginormous. If you look at him compared to any other middleweight, he is absolutely ginormous. And the reason I bring this up is because this isn't just a problem in this fight. But when you have that much muscle mass, as you guys know, muscle mass requires oxygen. If he doesn't knock you out in the first round, he looks gassed. And that's exactly what happened. If you go back and you watch the first round of this fight, there is not one person alive that would have said, you know what, Cormier is going to absolutely destroy him. You can tell. No, Rumble's the better striker. Rumble it was the more precise striker. He's the one that was doing more damage. But once again, just like in all his losses, once he gets on the, as soon as he went on the ground, I said he's going to get choked out. Mm-hmm. Vito Belfort, rear naked choke. Josh Koscheck, rear naked choke. When Anthony Johnson loses, he usually gets choked out, and that's what happened. And he got overly tired from round two, having to defend against preventing Cormier from continuing to just basically hold position and attack. It's brutal. It's a lot harder than people believe to sit there and fight from your back like he did. He's clearly the better striker, and I'll take it a step further. I think he's the guy that would make for a much, much more interesting fight against John Jones when he came back. But, you know, once again, and this has been his Achilles heel throughout his entire fight career, it's all about conditioning. You know, I think if the Gustafsson fight goes three rounds, we could have been looking at a completely different result. But when the fight goes one round, Anthony Rumble Johnson can fight with anybody in that weight division for one round.
Okay, let's throw this one around the kitchen. Chandler, your thoughts on the situation, if you've heard or seen what happened with Anthony Johnson and Cormier. Cormier ends up taking care of business and getting him choked out. And just like Brian hit on, these are the ways, well, this is the long way that he's been losing lately. Basically, once he gets to the ground, if people get the advantage on the ground, he's actually been choked out several times. Your thoughts on Rumble falling short and looking at a determined Daniel Cormier to take the belt back to Canada?
Well, I knew we were rooting for Anthony Johnson to win, and, you know, I kind of said I thought it was going to wind up being a submission. It was a good fight. I mean, he doesn't have anything to be ashamed of. He doesn't have anything to hang his head about. It was a good fight. It was a good fight all the way through on both sides. Like I said, Cormier doesn't really excite me. You know what I'm saying? He just doesn't move the needle for me, to be quite honest with you. I think Anthony Johnson would make a better champion. I think would make for better fights. I'm not even going to say his condition or anything else. His style of fight is he's got to get you early. Otherwise, he's subject to losing late. I mean, that's what some guy's style is. At this stage of the game, I don't think he can change who he is as a fighter. This is who he is. Maybe he's got to pick a better opponent. I'm not sure. I don't see where he has anything to hang his head about from the fight last night. Nothing at all. I mean, obviously, yeah, other than the fact that he didn't win, he was classy after the fight, and the thing he did with putting the belt on Cormier. I mean, there's nothing bad I can say about either fighter in this fight. The only thing I can say is Cormier doesn't move the needle for me as a champion. And by him bringing John Jones up, I'm not a fan of that. Let me be honest. I'm not a fan of that. You know that what that man is going through. So to say that right now, I think that is kind of classless, honestly. Why even bring John Jones up when you know he can't fight you right now? You know, why even bring it up? That's about the only thing I say about it. But for Anthony Johnson, you know, a great job. You know, keep going, and it'll happen for him. I truly believe it'll happen for him.
Well, and Anthony's defense, for my liking, for what I saw, after round two ended, his corner man told him exactly what to do to try and get back into the fight. And, yeah, I think that was the best thing he could have told him. And as soon as Anthony went against the grain and not listening to him, he ended up losing the fight in the third round. And he said, don't use your legs. Use your hands to win this fight, because that's basically what got Cormier to the ground early in the first round. He threw a big blow and basically had Cormier, you know, dizzy. And once Cormier figured, you know, my hands aren't the best in this situation, let me use my wrestling tactics and get Anthony to the ground, it worked for him. And Anthony had to try and deal with being ground, you know, grounded out, if I'm saying that correctly, you know, being grinded out, if you will, and, you know, surviving the round. And once he started, and they say once you lose blood from the face during a fight, you get dizzy. So I can just imagine him being weary and being tired of dealing with somebody with his, you know, same size and weight on him and trying to pound him out. So that's the only thing I looked at. When he was in the corner in the second round, I was like, he's getting tired. And, you know, once Cormier got to him again, he got to his legs again, I said, and you guys, everybody that was in the room, I said, you're getting tired, man. Like, I just literally screamed that at the TV. And basically, once he got to his back, it was just like, just don't let him get underneath the chin. He got there and got the tap out, and it was like, wow. Like, you would want him to stay away from throwing those kicks. He went and kicked Cormier, like, three different times trying to land a good one so he could end up, like, making him weary. That third one that he ended up throwing to his head, Cormier grabbed his leg and it was over. You know, Anthony had to basically try to fight his way out, and he was winded. And I agree with Brian. If he doesn't get those guys out there early, it's a fair shot for Anthony to be vulnerable 50-50. He could win or lose, basically just, you know, into submission. And it's funny that he's not losing these fights by, like, getting beat up. He's losing because he's winded and he's giving up in the ground game, or I don't really want to say he's giving up, but the ground game was working for Cormier at that given time due to the fact that the first time he ended up slamming Anthony because he got the legs, and the second time he just got back there and took care of business, and he basically had all his weight on him and had that rear naked chokehold on him to get him to tap out. So it's a tough pill to swallow, especially knowing him personally, wanting to see him to accomplish the defeat, and winning this up against Daniel Cormier, but Cormier actually gets the belt, and I understand where you're coming from, Chandler. Let him recover first before you call him out. Don't call him out while he has a whole bunch of clouds and question marks around him being John Bones Jones, but that was the last and only guy that had beaten Cormier, so I understand both sides of the spectrum. Nacho, we do have you back. Your thoughts on the fight? You actually picked Cormier in the fight from what you've seen. Give us your thoughts here at the brunch.
You know, I figured Cormier would go in there and do what he did, but full disclosure, at the beginning of the fight, the first knockdown where Cormier, it looked like it was going to be over fast and Rumble was going to be the winner. I was never more excited and more happy to be wrong at that moment. I thought that Rumble was going to win, and I was going to be excited for you guys. But Cormier just happened to be a little bit too intelligent and knew what he couldn't do and what he could, and knew that Rumble couldn't go the distance. Just like Brian said, he would get tired. Once he was able to withstand that first barrage and get through it, it was all Cormier from there. So, you know, like I said, it's a bittersweet to be correct. you're my big brother, so I don't like to see it down and to see your peoples like that, but sometimes you're not the best man on any given night. I did get this one correct, but it was just went the way I anticipated it going. Just Cormier being able to take him to the ground. I did not see him being able to stand up with Rumble at all, just because we all see what Rumble can do, and we all know the four knockdowns in under a minute in four fights. So, or the four knockouts. I'm sorry. So it's just the way I saw it going down was the way it went down. Just didn't like I said at the very beginning of the fight, I thought Rumble had it. He just needs to work on his conditioning. Now, that may be a thing of getting another trainer or getting another coach. We have seen fighters, I'm not saying it's done all the time, but we have seen fighters in the boxing ring and in the octagon change trainers and be able to pick up something that they were lacking. Not necessarily change your entire style, but pick up one thing that you're lacking. And if conditioning is that one thing, then that may be able to change Rumble's entire game plan and games. And fights from here on out. So It's just a great fight for me, and like Chandler said, as it pertains to Cormier, he is going to be a boring fighter to watch half the time. He's not going to be someone I'm going to enjoy watching as a champion, but I hope in this weight class we get some big guys, get some knockout guys up in here, and whoever that may be, come in there and challenge him on his feet and get him knocked down. We've seen he can get knocked down early. Hopefully someone can take advantage of that, hop on top, and ground and pound him out to a new championship. I think this is what we see in this division from here on out. As it pertains to the title, I think this title changes hands multiple times before, the John Jones guy even comes back, whether he comes back at all. I think this title is not going to be as the middleweight title has been, where it was held by one person for a long time and now Weidman for a long time, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. So this title may change hands multiple times here within the next year. It's going to be amazing to watch this title, the fights that are going to be around this title in this weight class. So other than that, it was a great night for the UFC, I thought, having two title fights. Unfortunate the way they had to have two title fights because one was given up unceremoniously, but the way it would have you, UFC, won out in the end. And the whole list of fights were great, from the undercards to the main events.
I definitely agree. And the one thing that, once he knocked Cormier to the ground, it was like you wish he could have maintained the onslaught that he was trying to do to him. He couldn't. And once he basically gave up position on the ground, it was a fight for him to try and get back up. And knowing that Cormier specializes in wrestling, you got to try and beat him at his own game. And that is something that Anthony specializes in wrestling. But I think the better draw was him to try and throw the blows and try to win that way. And he couldn't. He couldn't get back to leaving his feet alone. And then once he I think once Cormier ended up slamming him and picking him up, like I deal with this type of weight on a daily basis, it was tough for Anthony to get out of that. And that was the end of the fight. And I don't even want to bother him. Like, I basically want him to be in his own space. I don't want to ask or harass any questions. It won't even be a harassing situation, but people don't want to lose. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you got the whole world looking at this situation, especially for a championship at the end of the day. So I tip my hat to Daniel Cormier taking care of business. I thought Anthony could go in there and get you out of there. He couldn't. And Anthony's going to have to rebuild this situation. And Cormier, whoever ends up fighting him in the heavyweight class, it should be interesting. Probably Gustafsson will probably be the next guy that he fights. Until probably John Bone Jones can get healthy and get his mind clear, dealing with that shout out that Cormier threw and just basically ran out of the ring because he didn't want to deal with all of the questions. So I do actually respect that he didn't even want to talk a whole bunch of junk. He wanted to move on to the next one. So Cormier, I tip my hat in your win in defeating Anthony Johnson.
Hey Ty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't respect that, and I'm going to have to side on Chandler with this one. The fact that he just said his name and left because he didn't want to hear no other names because he knows Mr. John Jones is not going to be anywhere near ready for by the time this championship needs to be defended. Because the UFC, the fans, we're not going to be waiting for a Cormier Jones 2 and have this title sitting there just waiting for Jones to come back. That's not going to happen. So the reason he said that and ran out the ring is because he doesn't want to have anyone he doesn't have anyone on his list other than John Jones because he's scared. So I think Cormier was pretty gutless move at the end. He should have stayed in that ring. He should have called out relevant people, the number two, the number three, the number four fighters in those divisions and that division, and he should have gone on with his day. Calling out a guy who's at least 6 months to a year, if everything goes 100% his way, and God willing, he comes back and doesn't have any problems, you're looking at least maybe a year before this guy even comes back. So you're calling out a guy hoping you could sit around for a year and wait for this guy to come back? That's gutless, man. You don't want to fight no one else but a guy that can't come back for at least a year? Man, get out of here. You ain't no real champ.
Wow. And this is the guy that Nacho actually pulled for. Well, fortunately, you get the best dishes here in the kitchen, I must say. Now, fortunately, I'm going to transition from those main events from MMA to, I'm going to spoil a lot of people's dishes. And I know they're not. I know they're not here to defend themselves. I wish they were. But the interesting thing about this is, I think both respective conference finals in the NBA right now are finished. The Atlanta Hawks situation with Korver going down, Korver is done for the playoffs. Very bad situation for the Atlanta Hawks. He sprained his ankle severely. He will not be back in that Atlanta Hawks series. And knowing how bad they need him to try and win that series up against Cleveland, that is all but over. And I'll go to the game that happened last night with the Houston Rockets. Now, I don't know how people want to pick this one up, but this is oh my gosh, absolutely tragic. Now, I said this before the series started. I said that both of them would get swept, and not to sit up here and be like, oh, I'm right about them getting swept, because I want to see the competitive nature. I want to see them get back in the series and fight and prove me wrong in a situation. Cleveland is basically manhandling them, and Kyrie isn't on the floor, and this actually helps them because Kyrie gets to, you know, gain days of rest and try to be ready for the Golden State Warriors. Now, I want to talk about the Golden State Warriors in this Game 3 situation. And this is where, I'm not going to lie, Sports City, and I'm not standing on no soapbox and doing this, but I'm going to just say it. I am happy with being right about Coach McHale. Where's your coaching ability going for you to lose by 35 points at home when you guys were just in the Oracle, Game 2, game on the line, down by one. Harden didn't get the shot up, and everybody knows the history behind that. He should have got a shot up. They played good defense, they ended up tripping him. You guys are not ready. Harden was off. I'm going to put a lot of this onus on James Harden, too. Him being 3-for-16, you got to show up just as hard as Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and the rest of the supporting cast with the Golden State Warriors came out with that same type of energy, knowing the importance and urgency for you guys to win Game 3 so you don't face a 3-0 deficit. It's like, I don't know what else they need to do in Houston, but that series is all but done with them losing 115-80 in Houston, the biggest deficit ever for a Houston team to lose at home in playoff history. Throw this one around the kitchen, see how you guys feel about it. Chandler, I'll start with you first. I wish I had Sirius here, but I know Sirius will not be in this kitchen anytime soon.
For me, this just makes the Los Angeles Clippers look so much worse for losing to this team. I mean, this series has not been competitive. It hasn't. And you were talking about game one where it was close and it was however many points it was. That game wasn't really competitive because Golden State pretty much had the game in hand. Game two, same thing. Yeah, they made a comeback with Golden State. And last night was just, it was, you know what? Kevin McHale, I said it in the last round, I'm still saying that Kevin McHale should be fired. I'm sorry. James Harden, you have totally destroyed any shot you ever going to have at getting MVP. Even being you'll be in the conversation, you ain't never going to be the MVP. I don't care what you do in the regular season going forward because you have come up so small in these playoffs. Without Josh Schmidt, they wouldn't have even gotten out of the first round, by the way. Okay, they needed Josh Schmidt to get out of the first and the second round. Where are you at, James Harden? You running your mouth all season with MVP this and MVP that. And it's ridiculous how badly they're getting beaten at every phase of the game. It's not just that they're getting outscored. They're getting out-rebounded. They're getting out-hustled. You know, there's areas where
look. Steph Curry beat Dwight Howard to a rebound. What about that?
Yeah, exactly. Steph Curry's going down in the paint and taking rebounds away from your 7-foot Superman. Remember that guy? And when we talked about it the other day, and Nacho made it, I think it was Nacho or Slim, probably Slim or Nacho, I forget who it was, that talked about the Rockets needing to play small. Well, they are playing small because Dwight Howard is playing like a point guard. All right, so whether he's on the court or not, they're playing small. There's so many different ways to rip that team. It's ridiculous. I don't understand how a team could play this badly in the conference finals. You got a shot to go to the NBA finals every team has one bad game in the playoffs. The Houston Rockets have had about five. They've had about, what, at least three games where they've gotten beat by double digits and it wasn't close so far in the playoffs. At least three games where they got smoke checked. And last night, oh, my God. That you know what? I don't know what you can say. You got to put it on coaching. You got to put on the star player. Dwight Howard, I'm not trying to hear from you ever again. Talking about you want to win a championship, I'm not trying to hear from you. James Harden, you might want to cut that beard off. There ain't nobody fearing that beard, so it might be time for that to go. And Kevin McHale, I still say you need to buff up your resume because your team is getting embarrassed, and that's a doggone shame.
Wow. Wow. Stunned from that dish. Nacho, your thoughts on this matchup last night? At one point, when I seen the score, when the Warriors were up by 30, because I'm going back and forth from the fight to the game, and once they were up by, it was at one point, people, and I'm not lying, in the third quarter, it was, 60? It was like 60-something to 94 with like 2 or 3 minutes left in the third quarter. And I'm like, what is really going on? Like these guys are at home there in front of their home fans, supposed to be, you know, adrenaline rush, and they basically laid an egg all across the board. As much as I don't want to put a lot of this in James Harden's lap, 3-for-16 shooting, and just like Chandler said, him being in that MVP discussion, I'm not taking anything away from James Harden because he did have an MVP season. You got to have that importance of, you know, third or fourth quarter to respond to what's going on, and knowing that he has no other ammunition beside him, he has to try and do as much as he can to have another 30-point output. I think they're all but swept. I really do. I think Golden State moves on to the NBA Finals and gets to a wait of however long, and I don't think it will be long, out of what's going on in the Eastern Conference. But, Nacho, your thoughts before I go to Brian on his home state team.
You know, I mean, for the Golden State Warriors, without Andrew Bogut, I don't know how they win this game. I'm just joking. I'm totally kidding. That's totally a joke. But this game yesterday, it was really sad to watch as it pertains to this series. This is the Western Conference Finals. You're down 0-2. You're going home. You have a guy who's running his mouth, like you said, about MVP. You've got a guy who pretends to be Superman. We expect you as fans, especially us fans who are a fan of neither team. This is the Western Conference Finals, and if you're a fan of a Western team, a Western Conference team, you want to see your conference represented. And right now you're seeing the Golden State Warriors manhandle a team that supposedly is the second-best team in this conference and making them look like the Los Angeles Lakers. It's really ridiculous what the Golden State Warriors are doing to the Houston Rockets with all the talent the Houston Rockets have on that team. James Harden, you said it. You hit the nail on the head. 3-for-16 is inexcusable. But all across the board laying eggs like that, they did not show up. There was no ounce of gut in anyone. It really was sad to watch. Like you stated, I was watching the fights all yesterday. I clicked over midway through the second quarter when I believe they were up 22 points. May have been 24, 26. I don't know exactly how much they were up. I watched it for about 30 seconds and saw absolutely nothing from about a minute, maybe a minute and a half of actual gameplay time. And I saw nothing from Houston, nothing at all. Lackadaisical passes, just nothing at all whatsoever. And it looked kind of like the first couple of games where Houston, where it looked like Golden State would go on their runs and Houston would have those comebacks. And they would get within four, and then they would get within two. They might even take the lead by a couple points, and then Golden State would come back. I went back and rewatched those games, and to my dislike, I thought Houston was coming back. No, the Golden State was just taking those series off. So those few minutes, go back and watch. Golden State is not even running real offenses. They're just running down the court, throwing the ball as lackadaisical as possible, throwing up threes, throwing up whatever they want. That's the time Stephen Curry usually does those crazy dribbles and makes one, you know, and people go ooh and ah. Well, they're just not even doing anything. Then Houston would come back up, it looked like, and then they run their offense and run defense, and they go on another run, and they take the lead again. So Golden State has made Houston look really sad, and to what Chandler said, has really, really made the Clippers look horrible. Just the way that the Houston comes out now, you let this team come back from a 3-1 deficit and beat you, that's ridiculous. So the Clippers, they need to figure out what to do. The Houston Rockets need to figure out what they need to do with their future and what the hell Kevin McHale is going to do once this series is over, because he doesn't have a job. So they need to figure out a new head coach for them. And as it pertains to the Warriors, they just need to wait for Cleveland. I know you're going to get to that one as well. You hit it on the head with Kyle Culver. With him being gone, that most likely is a sweep. So we might be looking at a Cleveland Warriors finals coming up, and all the lights, cameras are on Steph and LeBron. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see. But that's really sad coming out of the Houston Rockets. It's just ridiculous. But soft as cotton out tissue, that's what you get. Sweeping the finals, Western Finals.
Wow. Felicity, like I said, they are putting dishes together, and I am just too stunned at how they're playing it, but it's expected. It's expected on the way that these guys perform, especially being at home, knowing that you guys – this isn't a first-round matchup, people. This is the Western Conference Finals. Like they are playing ball like this is a 1-8 matchup, like a one-seeded team versus the eight-seeded team. Like, I mean, game two – knowing Houston just lost by one, knowing James Harden was knocking over curtains and pissed off that he couldn't get a shot up, this is how you guys respond? This is how you respond, going home, knowing the importance of not letting these guys come into your house and take care of business? They went in there like they were at the Oracle. And knowing how loud the Oracle is, they shut your crowd up, and it basically was like they were at the Oracle, hearing everybody cheer all the way from the Bay out there in Oakland. Brian, you are the closest one to them, being out there in California, knowing that nobody in your area probably likes what's going on because you live by the L.A. area. But your thoughts and opinions and views on what Golden State is doing, trying to get to a championship or NBA final to bring the Larry O'Brien Trophy home?
Well, I mean, I think we've touched on a few key points. Great point that, you know, Chandler and Nacho made as far as reflecting back on the Clippers series. But, I mean, if you're just looking at this series, if you're just looking at this for face value, the Houston Rockets are getting ran off the court. I mean, you go back and look at the halftime score, 62-37. 62-37 at halftime. A lot of people would tell you the game was over at halftime. I mean, they were already up by almost 25 points at halftime. You know, and the problem is, you know, everybody talks about how great offensively that the Golden State Warriors are, but we forget, and I've mentioned this several times, Ty, and I know you know this, but we forget to talk about how good defensively they are. What they do to you defensively, at the defensive end. There was only one person on the Rockets team that shot above 50%, and that was Dwight Howard. And let's be honest, most big men next to the basket are going to shoot 60, 70, 80%. Most big men are going to have above 50% from the floor. But that's the difference in this game, guys. You're talking about a Golden State team that traditionally shoots about 45% from the field. They shot 40% from three-point land last night. And, oh, by the way, they got 17 offensive rebounds. So even by chance when they don't make the basket, they're going to get another shot anyways, because apparently Houston doesn't want to rebound anymore, allowing Golden State 60 rebounds, and 17 of them were offensive rebounds. I mean, it was absolutely pitiful performance all the way around. You know, steals, turnovers, that stuff that happens throughout a game. But when you start talking about offensive rebounds, that's just an effort thing to me. I'm sorry, you got the biggest guy on the court, you got the most dominant rebounding person from both teams, I think we can all agree, when he wants to be, and you allow 17 second chance points. That's just, to me, that's ridiculous, especially to probably one of the best shooting teams in the NBA. You cannot afford to allow them to have that many second chance looks. And you know what? You've already hit it on the nail on the head, and I know somebody else said it, but you know what? James Harden needs to be James Harden. He cannot shoot 2 for 15, 3 for 15, 4 for 15. I mean, let's be honest. This could be a completely different conversation if not for the fact that Corey Brewer and Josh Smith stepped up and really saved the Rockets' season last series in Game 6 against the Los Angeles Clippers. So I'm not going to minimize James Harden yet. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not gonna kill him. But what I am going to say is this. For all the bashing that we do on LeBron James for not coming up big in the biggest moments, for saying, hey, you know what, I don't care what you do in the regular season. I want to see it when you're playing in the playoffs when the bright lights are on against the best competition. I haven't seen anything, and if I'm wrong, please let me know. I haven't seen anything that shows me that when, quote-unquote, Harden is the guy, that he can be the guy. Because even last series, you could make a point that the Clippers move on if not for Smith and Brewer. So, you know, obviously we know Dwight Howard, that, you know, he was a Laker, you know, he was a Laker before, and I'll be the first to tell you, I think he's mentally weak. I think he's a role player. I think he's a piece guy. Everybody wants to make him a superstar, but I think he's a role player. I think he needs a good cast around him to win, and you know what? I don't know if he has the mental makeup to ever be what people hope that he would be. But I will say this. I agree with you, Ty. I think the Rockets are done. And I think they get swept. I said the same thing. I thought they would get swept. I think they get swept. I think this is just too much for them to come back from. And like I said, I everybody talks about the offense. But I think the Golden State Warriors, what has really – to me, jumped out the most, you know, because we know Curry's going to get his 30 or 40. We know, you know, we know Thompson's going to get, you know, 20, 25. What's jumped out to me the most is the defensive prowess of the Golden State Warriors. The fact that they're winning the loose ball battles. They're winning the rebounding battles. They're winning, you know, taking away the three-point line. They're active. And to me, that's the biggest difference. The Rockets do not have a way of executing their offense. They're under constant duress. And you go to the other end of the court, and the Golden State Warriors are shooting wide-open threes.
Now, it's interesting that a couple of things that you said, Brian, I had to look at it differently than what I usually looked at it as. And I was like, you know what? Ryan, he hit the nail straight on the head, and I never really looked at it like that. One, as much as I've seen Dwight Howard's career, from when he was in Orlando to when he went to the Lakers for that short stint to going to Houston to try and make it happen, he is mentally weak. He really is mentally weak. Now, let's think back in a situation where he was in Orlando, went to the NBA Finals. That was all of a five-game series, where the Lakers took care of business, winning that series 4-1. And then you get to the Lakers, and he has so much going on with the media out here in L.A., and him and Kobe have his spats. He hurried up and left L.A. Then he comes to Houston, and, you know, he's trying to do the best he can, sits out, James Harden carries the load, and for knowing the importance, just like Brian said, knowing that you have to keep these guys off the boards or keeping them from getting scoring opportunities, you're getting beat on the glass by guys like Andrew Bogut, Draymond Green, David Lee, and not to say anything bad about these guys, because these guys are good basketball players. You are just as good, if not better, to be a big man in the paint, and your head coach wasn't a point guard. He wasn't a shooting guard. He wasn't a small forward. He was a power forward, playing alongside the Chiefs back in the days in Boston. He knows the importance of possession of basketball play, getting that ball so your offense could get rolling. That was not important in front of you guys at all. At all. That's why I'm pointing my finger at Kevin McHale right now, because he basically was worried about everything else on the team and not getting at Dwight Howard or the rest of the bigs. Because I can't really look at just Dwight Howard being one of the guys to keep these guys off the board. But I clearly look at the situation where Curry ended up outboxing him out. First off, ran from the three-point line, get underneath Dwight's body, gets him to box out, and then gets the rebound and the foul. And the foul. You're lucky he didn't hit the rebound. Cause that'd have been a, I mean, you're lucky he didn't hit the bucket and the free throw because that would have been a three-point play. He ended up getting a rebound one-handed and almost making a layup on Dwight Howard. And Dwight screaming at his crew, oh, you guys got to box him out. I can't see him. You should be patrolling the paint. There's no more excuses right now. I think it's all but over. I think their last game in Houston, it could probably be a good fight with Houston. They could get the crowd in it. But I just think that the Warriors are comfortable going on the road against them. And for Steph Curry to have his first game in Houston up against his Rockets team, who is the number two seeded team in the Western Conference, he went 7-for-9 behind the three-point line. 7-for-9, well over 50% shooting from the field. Like, he was comfortable, like he was back in California. There has to be some type of defensive matchup, make him make sure he makes the right pass and make sure he gets those scoring opportunities away. They will let him shoot free will. For him to put up 40 points on your floor, you guys will lose by 35. Things that make you go, Okay. The last of the matchups, because I've been addressed by one of the chefs here at Sports City that they want to give a good dish out to Sports City, which I'm not mad at because I'm loving how the recipe is. Your thoughts and opinions on this situation where everything is going back to Cleveland, everything is going the Cavaliers' way. Do the Hawks get this done with, let's be honest, an 80% DeMar Carroll and no Kyle Korver? Or should we just leave this all alone and just say the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to sweep them too? Just like I tried to tell you guys before both of these conference finals started, anybody have any thoughts or opinions toward the Eastern Conference final?
I think this is the worst. I'm sorry, go ahead, Nacho.
Go ahead, Chandler.
I think it's the worst Eastern Conference finals I've seen in 20 years.
Yep.
Both of them. These are the worst conference finals I've seen in 20 years. And I mean that. These are the worst conference finals I've seen in 20 years. The two opposing teams don't even look like they belong in the playoffs, much less in the conference finals. So I have no comments. That's my comment on the Cavaliers and the Hawks series.
Okay, Nacho, how about you? Your thoughts on this Eastern Conference final, or we can get moving?
You know, just that I was right. I'm calling this one at least. You know, the sweep is over. Just I didn't anticipate Kyle Korver getting injured. But with them, I still thought they got swept. But he's Chandler hit it on the head. These are the saddest Western and Eastern Conference finals as a fan to watch. Except if you're a Warriors and a Cleveland fan, I think every other fan of this sport should be, you know, upset to watch these two series.
Brian, is this picture perfect for Curry and James meeting? I don't know what the Hawks can do to get back into this series, especially with DeMar Carroll probably being their best option defensively to deal with LeBron. He's injured, and more or less, I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are gaining more confidence game by game outside of LeBron on they're trying to accomplish this feat and bring a championship back to Ohio.
Well, I mean, realistically, the Atlanta Hawks could win a game. I mean, but ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think you're going to see a Clippers collapse here. I think LeBron James, Cleveland Cavaliers win the Eastern Conference final and move on to the finals. I actually want to talk about something, Ty, that take a few seconds and talk about something that I know we talk about here in Sports City. I've heard several people talk about, and I think it's worth noting. Go back 2 weeks ago when the Bulls were still playing the Cleveland Cavaliers and everybody talked about how LeBron James don't step up. This is why he's not a superstar, yada, yada, yada. I just wanted to say this, Ty. You look at LeBron James and what he's done in this postseason. Granted, I know the rebuttal. I know the argument is, you know, well, look, he's playing an Atlanta Hawks team that doesn't deserve to be there. He played a beat-up Chicago Bulls team. But what I will say is this. You can make the argument, if he makes it to the finals again, that this is quite possibly the worst team that he's ever made it there with. You got no Kevin Love. You got a beat-up Kyrie Irving that's played in one game, partial that game, hasn't really had a huge impact in the playoffs, and he's basically doing this with Mozgov and Thompson. And, you know, I know he had – you go back to the old Cavalier teams and you look at, you know, Varejao and you got Mo Williams and Gibson and some of these other guys. But I just wanted to say, you know, is it time that we look at LeBron James and say, you know what, this guy is the superstar that, you know, he deserves to get the credit that so many people don't want to give him. He's averaged over 30 points a game in the series. He closed out the Chicago series when they needed him to do so. And I think that this is the absolute worst team, you know, not maybe not from a construction standpoint, but where they stand right now, you can make the argument that this is the worst team that's ever made the finals. If the Cleveland Cavaliers make the finals, which they're going to make it, with Kyrie busted up and beat up, with no Kevin Love, you could make the argument that this is the worst team that's ever made it to the finals, at least in recent memory. I can't think of a team that was in a worse position than them. He's basically doing this on his own.
How about the 2001 Sixers?
That's true, too. Wow. That's true, too. One, I don't know who removed LeBron from superstardom because they already give him the plate that he's the best player in the league. So that's questionable. I definitely think he's a superstar. But I definitely agree with Chandler, the 2001 76ers. It was Allen Iverson and nobody else. I mean, you could put Dikembe Mutombo to be a defensive stopper, but he couldn't deal with Shaq if he tried or had a bulldozer out there. Shaq was determined to take care of business. George Lynch, you know, Aaron McKee, and then that's a very interesting Sixers team to throw in that discussion. But I don't even want to take too much away from LeBron's Cleveland Cavaliers team as they're constructed now, comparable to the 2007 Cleveland Cavaliers team that made that NBA final that ended up getting swept by the San Antonio Spurs, too. I think that this team right now, as it's constructed, even though they're dealing with injury, are a better team than that 2007 Cleveland Cavaliers team, at least to me, because it was, you know, the Jonas Ilgauskas is probably the only other notable that you could think of on that team. I mean, they had Booby Gibson that was knocking down threes before they got to the finals, but they all basically fell apart outside of LeBron, and LeBron didn't show up either in that NBA final up against the Spurs in 2007. So I think this team right now, as it is constructed, as they approach the floor, and knowing that they have a different coach instead of Coach Brown, they have Coach Black, they present a interesting discussion, to say the least. Okay. Chandler, you wanted to say something before we get into another topic?
Yeah, I think that's not a factual statement. This team is far better than the team that he had previously, far better, top to bottom. Because they don't have Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving is still playing, by the way. They have better players all across the board. And say it's the worst team that's ever made it. I mean, you can go back to Rick Barry, Golden State Warriors, that won a title, and name me four guys off that team. Okay, go back to the Seattle Supersonics team that won a championship and name me four guys off that team. Or the Washington Bullets team that they played and lost to, and then the Washington Bullets, not Wizards Bullets team, that beat them the next season. Okay, there's been quite a few teams that went into an NBA final with one guy leading them. So you can go all the way back to the 71 Milwaukee Bucks that had just had Kareem and an aging Oscar Robertson, so basically all they had was Kareem. So to make this thing that it's the worst ever, it's just not factual. You know, your opinion is valid, but it's not based in fact. Your opinion, you know, I respect your opinion, but it's not based in fact.
Okay, now I know there was a dish that you wanted to throw out there, Chandler, dealing with the guy from that 2001 season up against the Lakers, the Allen Iverson situation that is going around in basketball on how he was presented to the game of basketball. Chandler, your thoughts on the dish that you'd like to throw out to Sports City?
Well, there's been a kind of revisionist history going around about Allen Iverson about the past 2 weeks. I don't know how many of you caught the special that Showtime did on about him, which I thought was really, really good. But Now they're trying to compare him. Now they're talking about he shouldn't be a top 50 player. And they're comparing him to guys like Pippen, saying Pippen's a better player and this one's a better player. And I'm like, okay, when did all this happen? This is all being spoken of by people who never actually watched him play. Let me say that, who never actually watched Allen Iverson play. And then you want to tell me that somebody's better. Allen Iverson is a top 10 all-time player, period. He's a top 10 all-time player. Top 10, based on his stature, based on what he did with that franchise by himself at 6 foot, and actually he's a little shorter than 6 feet tall, let's be honest. He's got them long arms. Allen Iverson is maybe 6 foot tall, okay? Maybe a 105 with two bricks in his pocket that carried a franchise to an NBA final literally by himself. Now, you want to talk about doing it by yourself? He had Kevin Ollie as one of the players on that team. Kevin Ollie, the head coach of UConn. Outside of Dikembe Mutombo, if you can name five players off that team, you are a true Sixers fan. I love basketball, and I can't remember five guys off that team. But I'm trying to understand, where is it now that Allen Iverson has now suddenly not become not a great, great player? I mean, are you serious? Is people seriously want to tell me that Scottie Pippen was a better player than Allen Iverson? Are you serious? Do you seriously want to say that right now? I mean, and that's what's going on Twitter right now. This guy put out that Scottie Pippen was a better player than Allen Iverson. In what universe is that possible?
Wow. And that's an interesting debate. I mean, knowing that Scottie Pippen did his thing to be outside of Michael Jordan, to not only be another scoring punch, but defensively, the things that Scottie Pippen did, that does set up for an interesting debate. But Scottie Pippen has not had the capability of carrying a team, just i.e. looking at 94 and 95 without Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls. He actually got jealous of Tony Kukoc, for Christ's sake. And then once he went to Portland, I mean, he was close. They were real close to beating the Lakers, but once Shaq caught that one-handed alley-oop, it was like that momentum totally shifted away from the run that Rasheed Wallace was on and the Blazers to going to the Lakers 2000 and beyond legacy of the Shaq and Kobe era in Los Angeles. So it's interesting to see that Scottie Pippen be compared to Allen Iverson. It's two different positions, so it makes for an interesting debate. Throwing this one around the kitchen, seeing how you guys feel about it. Brian, your thoughts on the Allen Iverson situation on everything that's still following him, and he's out of the game.
Well, here's what I will say in agreement with Chandler. I agree with him. I think it's ludicrous to compare Allen Iverson to Scottie Pippen. I also don't necessarily think I agree that he's a top 10 player, but what I will say is this. If he's not a top 10 player, he's definitely a top 20 player. You're talking about a guy, as Chandler alluded to, you're talking about a guy that basically took a franchise and put them on his back and led them to a NBA champ or NBA the finals, excuse me, and basically did it all by himself. He led the league, and I don't know if this has ever happened before. You know what, guys? I'm not quite the statistician that I wish I was in the NBA, but I know it was either 2001 or 2002. I know that he led the league in scoring and steals in the same year. And to me, I mean, that's big. If you think about that, that means he's giving it all on both ends of the court. He's doing everything he can to on the defensive side. You know, everybody talks about, you know, the one knock on Allen Iverson was his work ethic. Everybody talked about, you know, that's the one thing I always hear when I hear Allen Iverson is, you know, work ethic. But what I will tell you is this. He may not have been big for practicing, and we don't know what went on behind the scenes. But when he was on the court, you never seen that dude standing around. Never. Never. There was nobody that wanted to guard him because he was full tilt all the time. He was always moving on the offensive and the defensive side of the ball, and he was always a pest in your hair when you're trying to dribble the ball. And like I said, as Chandler said, at 6 foot or maybe a hair under, during that era when centers did run 7 foot and it basically everybody had a big, to be a guy that could consistently drive to the hole in an era where it was okay to body check, unlike now where if you, you know, if you look at a guy wrong, you're going to get called on, you're going to get called a foul. He played a big man's game, and you know what? He did it, you know, he did it a lot better than a lot of these guys, these modern era guys that complain about needing other pieces around them. He played a long time without any pieces around him and did it very effectively. And you could make an argument, you know, like I said, I'm not going to say a top 10 player of all time, but what I will say is just pure shooter, pure scorers, he's probably one of the 10 best scorers of all time. He's one of the few guys, there's only a handful of guys that, you know, there's a term that's thrown around way too often, and that's can create his own shot. He literally created his own shot. He had not a lot around him, and he would create his own shot all the time. He could drive. He could shoot a three. He could make. He could. He was dangerous from anywhere on the court, and that's how I remember Allen Iverson. I don't remember him for the off the field, off the court stuff. You know, the antics and the bantering back and forth with the Sixers, you know, club. What I remember is the hustle and the effort that he put on the court every single night he was out there. And I remember how emotional he was when he stepped away from the game. And that's what people should remember, is how much he gave to the organization, how much he gave to the sport, and how much he really cared. And like I said, you know, I think it's so easy to get, you know, to fall into the trap of saying, you know, well, look, you know, how many championships did he win? Well, you know, Pippen played with quite possibly, and I don't think anybody would argue it, but quite possibly the greatest player to ever live and kind of landed in a great situation. And Pippen's probably a top 100 player of all time. You know, I don't know about top 20, top 50, but Allen Iverson was truly phenomenal, and especially at his size. I mean, it does matter. When you're talking about these big guys that are 7 foot with, you know, a 2 foot wingspan, you know, you look at guys like Manute Bol that could slam dunk without even jumping, and you're talking about a guy that was 6 foot that would drive to the hole consistently and get battered and beat up. You know, I have a lot of respect for his game and what he brought and what he did night in and night out, and I agree with Chandler. I think that this guy is often overlooked as one of the greatest, and he deserves that. He deserves that credit because, like I said, I don't know what year it was, guys, but I know for a fact, and I don't know if anybody's done it since, but I know for a fact he not only led the NBA in scoring, but he also led it in steals in the same year.
I mean, knowing what Allen Iverson was required to do for that team was amazing. And knowing the cast that Scottie Pippen had around them in Chicago, whether it was with Michael Jordan or not, or whether he was in Houston for that one little stint with Charles Barkley and Hakeem Olajuwon, or while he was in Portland with Rasheed Wallace, Steve Smith, Detlef Schrempf, Damon Stoudemire. I mean, he's been around a lot of interesting players throughout the NBA, so it sets up for a very particular discussion. If people want to argue that, I think the lone debate that everybody threw out there is that Pippen was on a defensive team a ton of times, and he's got 6 championships, but that was alongside Michael Jordan. So I could only imagine where and what the person was probably trying to debate with you, Chandler, about addressing if Pippen was better than Allen Iverson. I mean, in their own right, they both were great in their NBA careers, but you know I'm biased. I'm a Hoya fan, so I'm going to go with AI. Even though I can't take anything away from Scottie Pippen, Scottie defended a lot of the tough players in his era while he was in the NBA, so it's a very interesting discussion, to say the least.
Well, Cass, I don't know, is Nacho still here?
Yeah,
he's here.
Well, I'll let you get to Nacho, but I just wanted to bring up one more point to something that Brian brought up.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts or opinions on the Allen Iverson ordeal, which he is still facing now that he's out of the game, and also the comparison between him and the likes of players in yesteryear, including a guy like Scottie Pippen as well.
You know, comparing him to a player like Scottie Pippen, I can just have to agree with Brian and Chandler, and I'll just put it at that. They've hit that comparison straight on the head. But as it pertains to Allen Iverson and his career and the accolades he'll get from the fans or the writers or whatever. I equate his entire career to an NFL great. I like and Dan Marino, just the best player on the team, one of the best players in the league, just didn't have anyone around him or anything to do, and they made it to the Super Bowl or to the NBA Finals, and they got shown up by clearly a way better team. It's just the facts of life. The hand you're dealt, they played the best they possibly could. They put their names in the record books the way they could, and they were just unfortunate enough to not be able to have at least one or two other players like Scottie Pippen did, you know, maybe having, like Brian said, the best player in the game ever. But even if that, just having at least great players, you know, or at least good players on your team, someone notable that can help you out just once, you know, a game, or something like that, it speaks volumes and it helps other players out. So it's just, yeah, that's the only comparison, and that's how I like to equate them, just because two of the guys that will never get the credit they do well deserve, in my opinion, just because the teams around them were just so bad that they had to carry them as far as they could. And in both sports, it's really hard to do that when you're playing against, especially in the NBA, when he was playing against teams. Those were great teams he was playing against all year in and year out, and he was by himself, and he was still making it there. So just that's all I have to put about the Allen. But he's a great player, and I do agree with Chandler. He's definitely probably top 10, maybe 11, 12. He's right up there, one of the best to do it. And his stature definitely plays a key part in the way I value him as a player in a sport that you need to be tall in a sport and a time and era where you just got pounded. Where you got beat up, whether you went in the lane or not, you were getting beat up every time you had the ball. So I definitely commend Allen Iverson and what he did to this game, and to the short guys like me, the inspiration he was.
Okay, Chandler, I know there was a visit you'd like to address before we get out of here.
Yeah, when people talk about the practice thing, one of the things, and that's linked to him, but one of the things people don't know is that he had just lost one of his childhood friends, had just been murdered. They had just come off a bad loss. So all everybody got was a snippet of him talking about practice, but they didn't hear the rest of it. But he was talking about he had to go bury a friend of his. And all people wanted to talk to him about was whether he had gone to practice or not. There was more to it than just him not wanting to practice. There's more to it than that. And this labeling of him, and one of the areas that people not going to notice, well, you know, he couldn't pass like such and such. And again, they used Pippen. He couldn't pass like Pippen. So that's an indictment of him as a point guard. Allen Iverson wasn't a point guard. Allen Iverson was a scoring guard. He played the point because someone had to bring the ball up and handle the ball. So his position was point guard. Allen Iverson was not a point guard. He was not a point guard. This is why I get into it with Ty all the time about Russell Westbrook. This is why I keep hammering that point home about some of these guys that you guys call point guards. They're not point guards. Allen Iverson was a scoring guard. His job was to get buckets. His job was not to assist because he had nobody to pass to, number one. When he did have guys, there were games he had double-digit assists, but he wasn't a point guard. He was not a point guard, okay? He was a scoring guard. So you cannot look at him and say, well, as a point guard, he didn't do this. That wasn't his job. He wasn't a point guard at Georgetown, by the way. He played the position, but his job was to score. His job was to dominate the ball. And the player he most gets compared to is Tiny Archibald. Tiny Archibald was able to play the point because he was on the Boston Celtics. He played with a guy named Larry Bird, so he kind of had somebody to pass to. He played with a couple of guys who could actually shoot and score. So he was able to utilize that asset of his game. Allen Iverson is not a point guard. Not a point guard. Scoring guard. And if you look at it from that prism and look at his career, you'll see just how great he truly was.
Okay, well, I can't argue it too much because I remember Iverson when he first got there, his freshman year, he was a point guard. His sophomore year, he went to the shooting guard position playing with Victor Page. And I wish I could do an episode of Where Are They Now because Victor Page was excellent. And once Iverson kind of, you know, got pushed out of Georgetown, Victor Page tried to follow his same steps his sophomore year and did not make the league. And drafted. You know, don't get me started on Georgetown. That hurts too much. But a great episode here at the brunch, man, and loved every last bit of it. I'm still beside myself, Anthony. I wish you the brother championship back to the East Coast, but it's going north of the border to Canada with Daniel Cormier. I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. Epic brunch today. We gave y'all more. We've been giving y'all a lot of food lately, man, a lot of food for thought. So, Sports City, we doing this for you, doing it real big. Nacho, I'll start with you first. Thank you for stopping by the brunch. I need a plug, closeout, anything that you like to promote as we shut down the brunch and head to Memorial Day.
You know, just add Nacho in the Box on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you guys for letting me come on, Voice by Opinion. It's been a great week. Great weekend in sports as it pertains to boxing and MMA. James DeGale yesterday on NBC, PBC on NBC, became the first British gold medalist, Olympic gold medalist winner, and world champion, being the middleweight champion, or the super middleweight. And he challenged anyone and everyone in that division to come get him. He wants award and all this good stuff. So it's going to be – that division's lighting up as well. So this is going to be fun to see in boxing. Like I said, and I'm going to say it every time, boxing is not dead. And I'm going to say it one more time just because I still hear people complaining about it. If you spend $100 for a bra and you mad because you got a boxing lesson, that's your fault. You know, you have a great night. Thank you guys so much. And, again, everyone's so awesome. Chandler, Brian, Ty, you guys are the best. Thank you. I learn something new every day.
And I'm going to just say it like this. Boxing may not be dead, but Andre Durrell, your boxing career might be finished. I'm going to just say that to say the least. DeGale brought the fight to you, and looking at the highlights, because I was actually in the midst of doing the food fight while it was going down. As I finished the food fight to try and hurry up, the fight was over. So I was pretty mad about that. Durrell, I don't know what it's going to take for you to rebuild your career, but this is an uphill battle for you. Chandler, thank you for stopping by the brunch. We need a plug and close out for you as we shut down the kitchen for another epic episode here at the Sunday Morning Brunch.
It's always a lot of fun, man. Thanks, everybody, for coming, especially getting this early. Nacho, you know what? I've been looking outside for FedEx, man. I ain't seen nobody bringing me no food. I'm just saying, I ain't seen no FedEx truck coming up with no food. But for those of you who are disappointed with the blowouts and the terrible NBA playoffs, you might want to take a look at some hockey because that Chicago-Anaheim series is bananas, another double overtime game, and the Rangers-Lightning series is bananas as well. So if you want to see actual good playoff games, watch hockey.
I'm too nervous to talk about these blue shirts because we come back home tonight up against Tampa Bay, and I'm not talking no junk, but Hyrie finally showed up. Henry, look, I know this. I've been talking my junk, man. You got to do your job, man. Listen, New York on your back, man. I've been screaming for Cam. Don't make me come to the Garden. I don't live that far. I'll get in the Garden quick. I'll get a ticket. Now, you're crazy. I'm not even going. I'm not even trying to pay them ticket prices for the Garden. You hear me? Listen, they want $600 for nosebleeds. This is how serious. When New York get in a swagger about sports, you can't afford to go to these games unless you get your business or company paying for these tickets. That's for sure. That's for sure. So I will be watching this from home. Hopefully these dudes get to go back to Florida with an advantage. I'm saying it. I don't care. I'm going to talk a little bit of junk, a little bit. But, Henry, don't let me down. Do not let me down. In the Chicago situation, it could end up happening. Blackhawks, Rangers, I'm hoping. This was for city purposes. Y'all know why. Breaking news, I need a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut down the brunch on another episode of the Sunday Morning Brunch here in Sports City.
Well, boys, as always, it's always a pleasure to talk sports with you guys. Today was no different. This Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be the final episode of the season of the NFL Front Office Show. We'll be concluding our draft coverage. We'll also be discussing some NFL topics. So if you want to catch that episode, definitely stop by and listen to that. You can go on our website at sportscitychefs.com. Check out the player interviews, the blogs, the website, articles. We have some information for you. Also, we have our full channel lineup. Ty, as always, my friend, it's a pleasure, and I'll see you next week.
Definitely see you right back here next Sunday. Interesting, I got to talk to the people around Sports City if they want to do something for Memorial Day or not. Stay tuned to all of the pages, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or whatever. I want to respect the holiday, but there's a lot of stuff going on today that should be discussed in Sports City. So I'll see how the chefs feel about it tomorrow to see if I'll be back in the kitchen to give y'all a Monday night sport wrap-up to start off y'all sport week. SportsCityChefs.com, check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. A lot of stuff popping off, whether the Hawks can actually deal with the Cavaliers and put a win on the board. I doubt it. Also with the Rangers and the Lightning, the Rangers back home. Hopefully these guys get it done today. We'll have stuff, man. It depends on how the chefs feel. Y'all stay tuned. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Thomas holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this, everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours.